Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
The 6 o'clock news from the BBC with Nicholas Witchell and Philip Hayton.
Good evening. The headlines at 6 o'clock. At least 13 dead. Damage running into millions of pounds. The chaos on the day a storm battered southern Britain without warning.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the greatest games on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. My name is Marcus. Jonathan Wilson is sat opposite me. Lovely to have you here, Jonathan, as always.
Thank you very much.
And with us is Scott Murray, journalist and contributor to The Guardian, among others, and writer of The Title, A History of the Old First Division in England. Scott, pleasure to have you with us.
Yeah, hello. Thanks for having me.
Scott, you have chosen an Old Firm derby from 1987. Some people may call it the Old Firm derby, from those times. Yeah. Rangers 2, Celtic 2. It was explosive stuff. It was described as a great shame by some people. So famous, infamous, all those kind of words can be used. Why have you gone for this one?
Because I think it's been slightly misrepresented in time. I mean, it was obviously a ludicrous rammy, and
that's putting it mildly.
The reputation it's got is fair enough on most respects, but it was also just a really entertaining football match as well, and it was good fun. And maybe I'm a little bit my view of the match is coloured a bit by the fact that I was watching it in the south of England, and this was a time where you couldn't get Scottish football on TV. In fact, there wasn't even English football, hardly any, on the telly at that point. So when this kicked off, it kind of had to, you know, I had to get on the phone to my uncle in Aviemore and say, look, Andrew, will you tape Scott Sport tomorrow and post it down? And a couple of weeks later, I'd get this sort of grainy VHS tape.
You knew the score, though, by then, did you?
I had, yeah.
News had reached you.
We'd worked out the score, yeah. But, well, this is the thing, because there was, like, you know, a little clip of it on, like, the, you know, the ITN news and not much else. And I thought, no, I have to see this whole thing. And it was a huge story in Scotland. And it was big in England, but no one had seen anything. So it had this, I don't know, it had this glamour. I don't know if people
have... mythical air about it as well, maybe.
Yeah, but I think there was a glamour about it because the English game at the time, I mean, the last two Liverpool teams that had won the championship, 84 and 86, weren't that exciting. I'll annoy a lot of people by saying the Everton team in 85, they were a great team, but they've not lived on that well in the memory, I don't think. You know, 87, Wayne Clark and... you know, 60-odd-year-old Paul Power. It's not, it's not like real, you know, box office stuff. And at the same time, there was this sort of explosion going on in the Scottish League. And that was partly, obviously, to do with the Heysel ban. So Rangers...
Well, the fact that Rangers have six English players in this game. Yeah, so the likes of Butcher and Woods would not have been there, I suspect, but for the fact they wanted to play European football.
I mean, I don't want to jump ahead too much. I find it incredible Trevor Francis is in there.
Yes, yeah.
You know, a huge name in British football.
Well, past his best by then, probably, but still, the point.
Yeah,
exactly.
But he was still, I mean, if you watch even the highlights of this match, like Francis is in the middle of this melee, and it's like you've sort of, you know, dumped Byron in the middle of like a brawl in a Wetherspoons or, you know, Wordsworth on a Question Time panel or something. He's just completely out of place. And you think, what the?
Yeah.
And he's sort of wandering around in this very silky fashion, and there's just bedlam going on all around. And I love that about it too. But just the whole thing just seemed to sort of sparkle and shine in a way that English football wasn't at the time.
Mm. Well, I mean, do you think there's an argument this is the greatest time of Scottish football? You've had the period when Celtic and Rangers were not dominant, when you had Ferguson's Aberdeen and you had Dundee United.
Those two sides reaching European finals.
Yes.
In that period.
Yeah, really, really good teams, but not the traditional teams. So there's sort of been this breaking up of the old firm. Mm-hmm. And this is, I guess, the context of this game is part of the process of Rangers re-establishing themselves and part of the Souness revolution. So Souness had come in the beginning of the previous season. Yeah, he'd left Liverpool, which again I think is probably Heysel ban related. Becomes player manager of Rangers.
Well, he'd been to Sampdoria. In between,
Goes to Rangers, player manager. And this is a Rangers team that when he takes them over has not won the league in 8 years, I think, and they'd won three of the previous 22.
Yeah, it was
which for one of the great teams, or one of the great clubs, is a remarkable period of failure.
He won the league, though, in that season.
He didn't win hearts and minds, though, did he?
Yeah, I don't think he was too worried about that, certainly.
do you want to talk about Souness's approach?
I mean, well, yeah. But I mean, he came in. I think the point you made about the everyone keeps saying, "Oh, it wasn't, you know, it was their first title since 1978." But I think the other statistic you mentioned was the real eye opener, the one that's like 20 odd years that only won two or three league titles. But there was still this idea, you know, even though Ferguson's Aberdeen were the dominant force, and there was Dundee United, there was still this idea that it was the duopoly. It was still the old firm ruled over everything, but Rangers just really hadn't contributed to the story at all. And it, you know, and back then they couldn't excuse it on liquidation.
Yeah.
It was just the fact that they were always second best to Celtic, but then they were, you know, third, fourth, fifth down the league. you know, this was something that just didn't happen in Scottish football. Rangers had been the dominant force for
so long. His debut as player manager against Hibs commits perhaps the worst tackle I've ever seen.
Well, he got the wrong guy.
Yeah, he got McCluskey and he was going after Beadle. Is that the guy he was trying to guess?
Yes, or was it the other way around?
McCluskey's the guy who gets done, definitely.
I think it was right. So, but just by the fact that he got the wrong, he spotted the wrong mullet.
Yeah. I mean, in the 80s, that was a problem, wasn't it?
Ali McCoy's hair in this game is something quite special on that theme.
McCoy's usually had pretty good hair, I have to say, when he was a player.
So Souness gets sent off on his debut against Hibs, leaving a 21-man brawl behind him.
The thing about that was is the way he sort of, once the deed was done, he just sort of calmly walked away, and there's this sort of nuclear Armageddon.
But it's quite like the Hollywood hero, isn't it, who sets fire to the building, walks off, and the explosion happens as they calmly, you know, they don't duck for cover. It just, it's as if it's...
Or like John Wayne at the end of The Searchers.
My work here is done, sort of thing. And but in Souness's...
And then he rounds off the season, celebrates the title by getting sent off at Pittodrie as well.
But that's the odd thing. He does feel like my work here is done. I wanted to make the players have a bit more fight and all that kind of stuff, and he certainly achieved that.
Well, I mean, his philosophy at Liverpool, in the great Liverpool sides of the late 70s, early 80s, was, you know, you come and play us at football... We'll beat you at football. If you really want to turn this into a scrap, okay, you know, let's go. Mm. And we'll win at that as well. And it was usually...
Oh, he wasn't fussy,
It was usually always down to Souness. I think one of the problems when he got to Rangers, it was exactly the same. I mean, he wasn't going to change his philosophy. It was like, you know, one way or the other, but either way, we're going to assert ourselves and, you know, Rangers will win. The problem was the team wasn't as good. So he was also a bit older and just that split second behind.
Yeah. Well, because going into that game against Celtic in... So
Rangers win the league. So Celtic respond to that by sacking Davy Hay and they bring back Billy McNeil, who's not a man who's ever going to take a backward step.
But that's maybe one of the reasons why they brought in Billy McNeil.
Oh, sure it is.
It's a counter move, really.
Yeah. Fight the hard man with another very, very hard man.
Fighting fire with, or fighting Graeme Souness with fire, I suppose, is the old expression.
Well, also the weird thing about that, looking back, or rather that at the time it was seemed very odd, because McNeil is just coming off his double relegation whammy in England with City and Villa. So he's kind of, although he's obviously still a legend and he's won titles already in Scotland as a manager, he's kind of a little bit tainted goods now. And they've just got rid of, well, I say got rid, they've, McClare's gone to United, Mojo off, I forget where he went. Was that
went
when
to
he
France,
went over to
Nantes?
Nantes it was, And of course would go back to Glasgow. Quietly under a bushel.
His story is yet to come to its conclusion. It's quiet diminuendo. And I think Alan McAnally had gone. So
And Billy McNeil famously, when asked about all his bar, just went, "Who is McAnally? I've never heard of him." As he goes, he joined Bayern, didn't he then? Or did he go to Villa then Bayern?
That's a good question.
Anyway, the point is...
He moved on to...
A superb centre forward. Brilliant McNeil's pretending not never to have heard of.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a sort of the backdrop of it. So the league campaign gets underway. So what's the kind of the build-up? Because, as I say, this game happened in October, so you've had a few months of the season already. Rangers are champions, but Celtic, under Billy McNeil... They're thinking to themselves, hang on, we've got a real chance to win the title back.
And they're 4 points clear when the game begins. So I guess from Rangers' point of view, they can't afford to lose this game. They can't let that gap become six.
Yeah. I mean, Rangers had started fairly slowly, a couple of draws, defeat. Celtic had come out the traps. Andy Walker was new and was doing pretty well. I think McGee as well. Was scoring a few.
Another man with a temper.
Yeah, Frank McAvenny.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, yes, and so they bought McAvenny, and there'd already been one Old Firm game this year, and Souness had managed to get himself sent off in that one as well. So it sort of begs the question: what would happen if Souness was was in midfield for this match? But luckily he wasn't.
It's an unbelievably good midfield, given that Sinners wasn't there. Mm. The fact you have Derek Ferguson, who, I mean, I confess I have a big soft spot for him from his time at Sunderland when he was let down by being surrounded by rubbish other players. And for a man whose key job is, or key skill is the ability to play simple passes to bring other players into play. He's sort of a lubricant in midfield. But no point in lubricating shit players. But lubricating Ian Durant is very much worth it.
Yeah.
And John McGregor, the other midfielder. And I mean, Davy Cooper on the bench.
Yeah.
Because they've got Falco on the left rather than him. So, yeah, that was the thing. So when I started watching the game again to sort of refresh myself, and I hadn't looked at the teams, I just sort of... shocked by just how many good players are there.
Yeah, on both sides as well. I mean, it was nice to see big Mick McCarthy at the back for Celtic as well.
Yeah.
Richard
Goff playing at right back for Rangers. I guess it was just in terms of Scottish football, it was a different era that they had some really, really good footballers.
Indeed. So. All right, we're going to go for a quick break, and after which we will talk about that explosive Old Firm derby. See you in a moment.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
All right, gentlemen, let's get into the 90 minutes then, because there's an awful lot to talk about. Scott, take it away.
Well, it kind of... The stakes were raised pretty much from the off. And I think Was it McCarthy or was it Burns?
Tommy Burns, if you're talking about the internet, I think you're talking about Tommy Burns lifts across in...
From the left.
Overhits it.
Yeah. Mm. And... Woods threatens to do a bit of a Jordan Pickford and bat it back to McAvaney, who's moving in. But he collects the ball, but McAvaney...
Well, he pushes it over.
He pushes it over the bar.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But he does a full Nat Lofthouse McAvaney on Woods.
And Woods, to his credit, appears totally unflustered by it at that point.
But it was a hard enough hit, I think, that it would have... It would have registered.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Woods it was, yeah.
You know, that one would have been remembered for what, you know, what was soon to happen. And what soon happened was it was a kind of a melee out of nothing, wasn't it?
Morris gets away down the right. So the Celtic fullback gets away down the right, puts in a low cross. Jimmy Phillips sort of half blocks it and the board sort of trickles to Woods, who just bends down and picks it up.
Mm.
And at that point, it seems like a pretty banal bit of play. But then...
Well, then McAvaney sort of arrives on the scene late, puts his boot in, you know, to which Woods, like, especially after what had gone before, but certainly even, I think, on its own merits, you know, was within his rights to take umbrage. So he gets up and sort of... You normally say people gently cup things, don't they? But this was like more of a... He cupped McAvaney's face, but like it was... It, you know, he meant it. At which point it all kicked off. McAvaney, you know, tried to come back. Terry Butcher came in, you know, full Glasgow bouncer mode, shove in the chest, get away.
Butcher doesn't need an invite for that kind of thing.
Not really, no. And they were all beginning to come together, and this is kind of what makes it like such an egregious act, but an act of sort of strange beauty as well, was Roberts just like slipping in at the side. A neat little jab to poor McAvaney's Cooper. And then he just sidled away, and it was such a... It was almost like a sort of magic trick where there was this big misdirection going on somewhere else, and Roberts just came in, job done.
Because Roberts was the one who did him.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
Roberts gets away scot-free.
From that bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Because McAvaney goes down, and I have to say, when I first saw it, even though I knew sort of what had happened, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, McAvaney was just acting up. It wasn't actually anything. And then I see the replay from the other angle. Yeah. Like, Roberts has just punched him.
Because Woods has a bit of a nibble. I mean, Chris Woods didn't, it's a bit of a cliche thing, he doesn't strike me as that type of player, really, to get involved in a bit of the trouble. When you mention, you know, McAvaney get involved in Butcher and all these people, you think, well, that makes sense. But it seemed unlike Woods to do that. But then the referee comes over after a little bit of time.
A huge amount of time.
And then...
He's been writing a 1,000-word essay.
Seems to take an age.
And that's what I absolutely love about this. In the midst of this chaos,
yeah,
you know, one of the most anticipated games for years, yeah, incredible tension in the crowd. There's been this kind of pretty significant melee.
We're only 17 minutes in.
We're only 17 minutes in. And there's Jim Duncan... With his notebook, writing kind of, and just keeping on, and nobody's crowding around him, but just letting him write.
Mm.
And then...
He's the calmest man in the stadium, which is normally what you want for a referee, but he's too calm.
A good sort of 30 seconds, 40 seconds later, he finally shows a red card to McAvaney.
Yeah.
And the brilliant thing is Chris Woods' reaction.
Yeah.
Because Chris Woods sort of grabs the back of his own head in shock.
He seems gutted.
He can't quite believe it. And then you see the realisation dawn on him. Oh, God, if he's gone, so have I. But it takes another 30 seconds of writing in his notebook.
Well, you see the Rangers fans start celebrating because McAvaney's gone and taunting the Celtic fans because they're thinking, all right, you know, off he goes. And then, as you say, 30 or 40 seconds later, eventually Woods gets the red card and the Celtic fans' reactions, suddenly they start taunting the Rangers fans. It's a remarkable... I implore anybody to look at this on YouTube.
And people say VAR slowed the game down.
Mr Duncan slowed down the game that day. So Woods is sent off. Rangers don't have a goalkeeper on the bench.
And then Butcher gets himself booked, seemingly not for the shove, but for dissent. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but it appears that it's his reaction to Woods being sent off.
Yeah, so Butcher gets booked. Roberts goes in goal.
Well, I mean, just to say...
Oh, sorry, yeah.
No, it's just that. I assume that you're right about that, that it's for dissent, just purely because it's Woods and McAvaney who get themselves sent off.
Yeah.
And without question, they were the two who contributed the least...
Yeah, they were the instigators, but...
To
but
this.
Yeah.
I mean, if Butcher hadn't come in and, it wouldn't have quite kicked off in the way that it did. And I sometimes wonder whether Woods got sent off for Butcher's shove.
Right.
Which would then explain why...
Yes, if Butcher was just sort of seen two players square, off, one goes down, I'll send off one from each and that'll do.
Yeah.
But you're right, it's yeah, in order of level of offence, number one by some margin, Roberts.
Yeah.
Number two, Butcher.
Yeah.
And then joint third, yeah. McAvaney and Woods.
I mean, you could even argue it's not the worst thing Roberts did that afternoon.
We'll
get
move
to
on to that.
Yeah, so Roberts goes in goal.
He used his hands to good effect. from start to finish.
My goodness. So Roberts goes in goal.
Well, and that's a strangely beautiful moment when Chris Woods, kind of, as he's jogging off looking slightly confused, stops to take off his shirt. And he's got a very sort of, it's very 80s muscle, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's the kind of body that all teenagers have now because everybody spends all the time in the gym. But at the time, it's like, my God, look at this Adonis. That's incredible.
Yeah. So not long after
that. It was a lovely homoerotic moment in the middle of all this sort of overly macho.
And every good Old Firm derby has needs one.
Yeah, yeah.
So not long after that, Celtic take the lead.
Yes.
So they go 1-0 up. And
that's a lovely goal. It's a really nice finish from Walker. Mm-hmm. I have a sense that almost all goals in the late 80s looked a bit like that. A ball over the top, forward running on, nice neat finish.
And that run, that celebratory run as they score, and then the run kind of...
Yeah, because they're always making a run movement on an angle, so they can keep...
Exactly. Yeah. It's poetry of motion, you could argue. So Celtic go ahead, and they go 2-0 up. And
which is a ball over top from Mick McCarthy.
Yeah.
Terry Butcher, under pressure, ends up lobbing the ball over Roberts.
If anything, you're thinking it can't go much worse for Rangers. The goalkeeper sent off, they got an outfield player in goal. Well, then Butcher, I mean,
it should be said, neither of the goals are Roberts' fault.
No.
I mean, possibly a proper goalkeeper might have been a bit nearer the first one, but it's a really good finish.
But he saved a one-on-one.
Yeah, he had saved a one-on-one. That's true, actually.
Just before that, he stood up and made...
Deflected it wide open from Peter Grant, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. But yeah, so Butcher, in defending, tries to kind of presumably knock the ball out for a corner or whatever, and ends up perfectly lobbing his own goalkeeper to make it 2-0 to Celtic. I mean, it's another calamitous moment in the game. And what was that, after about 36 minutes? Mm. Rangers are down, and they're looking pretty out of it. We move into the second half, and then... Butcher, of course, he's already on a booking. You know, he just can't help himself with in the climate. Gets himself sent off for, what was it, a shove?
Well, no, there's a cross comes in from the right, and Butcher jumps with McKnight, the Celtic keeper.
That's right, yeah.
As if it's a foul, but nothing really in it. You know, he's challenged slightly over aggressively for the ball. Kind of thing that happens a dozen times a game. But as they both go down, he has a little bit of a nibble on the ground.
That's right,
and. Gets a straight red. It's not a second yellow. It's a straight red, and Mr. Duncan writes another 500-word essay. And at this point, you're thinking 2-0, man up. This is Celtic about to win the title because we're going to get 6 points clear here, and even in October, that's going to be enough.
Yeah, I mean, so Rangers were dead and buried, Scott.
So 6 points clear when it's 2 points for
win. Rangers are surely dead and buried. They're 2-0 down. They're down to 9 men. Celtic are down to 10 men. They have that one man advantage.
Well, and the sort of idea slowly germinating that, like, this sort of soonest revolution might just be like a one season flash in the pan. And, you know, because they had been talked up at the start of the season as the team that were going to go and win the title, and Celtic were kind of in a bit of a mess. But here's Celtic, as you say, about to go way clear in the league with just a couple of months gone. And it's 2-0 at half time. Then they got Butcher sent off, but then McCoist rocks up with I think a fantastic goal.
Yeah, I mean, it's only 3 minutes after the red card, so it's almost immediate that they get back into it.
And what I really liked about it is that when it goes in, and it's equally as good a goal as I think Walker tuck his into the bottom right and. But McCoist gets his off the left-hand post, and it's a really nice finish. He doesn't do any of this sort of very pious thing of rushing into the net to grab the ball, frowning, running back to the... He's away down the wing, giving it all, wagging finger.
His mullet bouncing behind him.
And I love that as well, that just like he was lost in the moment of scoring the goal, and
it was something crazy, like his 15th goal of the season already.
he was
phenomenal. I mean, he didn't score many goals for Sunderland, but as soon as he got back to his level,
but you've been waiting all show to say that, by the way.
But, I mean, we should say it's a beautiful goal because Ferguson, sort of great feet and great balance to sort of win the ball from a bit of a sort of bit of a mess in the middle, advances with it, plays it inside to Richard Gough.
I think so, yeah.
What on earth is he doing?
Gough's on the wander.
Yeah, the right back playing sort of as number 10.
Yep.
He then plays this beautifully controlled pass into McCoy's cutting in from the left. And then, yeah, great finishing off the left-hand post.
But it was funny how that changed the atmosphere, because the Rangers fans then, they celebrated it as if it was like an equaliser, or almost to put them in front. They're still 2-1 down with one man less on the pitch. So even with that goal going in, it's still... And they still have Roberts in goal, for crying out loud.
The thing is that as wild as the match had been up to and including the point... Butcher got himself sent off. I think it'll have been forgotten pretty quickly. It's the last bit. You know, there would have been a bit of press about it or whatever, but it wouldn't be something we're talking about 30 years down the line. You also needed this ludicrous footballing story as well, and what remained wasn't solely a footballing story, but in the context of the actual match itself. The fact that they're launching this 2-goal comeback with 9 men, with a non-goalie, with a clown in goal, and they managed to turn it round, and that and the context of the season and what have you, it needed that bit as well to become it's why I think it's a classic. I think people do think this is a classic.
Oh, it is,
but just not necessarily. With such love and affection.
And Celtic very nearly go 3-1 up. Billy Stark has this beautiful looping header that hits the woodwork.
Well, I think as well, it's that very rare thing. It's a sort of burst of Graham Roberts positivity. is when the ball comes... Roberts is beaten all ends up. He's just rooted to the spot. But the ball comes twanging back. That header comes twanging back off the crossbar. And he just plucks it out there.
Yeah, he does. Very nonchalant.
As though nothing has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not long to go. And I think that's just one of those things that it just sent, because the atmosphere was kind of crazy at the moment, it just sent that thing. It was like, come on, we can do this. Eh, we're not 3-1 down. This is still, there's still a goal in this. And it was, because the same thing happened. Not the same thing happened, but Roberts had the ball in his hands in the build up to the very late equaliser.
Yeah, it's a goal kick.
Yeah,
which is actually a terrible goal kick he takes, but you're right. He runs so isn't it?
But so it still has that feeling that something could happen.
The commentator, I think, is Jock Brown.
Yes, yeah.
Suggests the Celtic players deliberately put the ball out for a goal kick to waste a bit of time. If you're going to do that, don't lob it onto the top of the net with a miss hit cross.
Yeah, but that's Jock.
Belt it into the Celtic fans.
You're trying to get into the mind of Jock Brown, Jonathan. I think we should stop short there.
But so Roberts takes the goal kick. It falls short, but thankfully it falls to Ferguson, who controls it well, plays the ball out to the right to Durant, who breaks down the right, he crosses
it. It's a lovely run as well.
Like his initial cross is headed clear, he picks up the loose ball again.
Another goal.
And then crosses, and McKnight fulfills every stereotype you want of a Satan-greasy Scottish keeper. Flaps at it.
No, it was Northern Irish, was he?
He was actually. That's true. Yeah, sorry,
that would have been enough for Greavesy.
Exactly. Yeah,
he's playing for a Scottish team.
Sure.
McKnight spills it, and Richard Gough hooks it over the line.
Richard
2-2.
Gough, the man of the moment. I mean, I find it incredible the build up of that goal, and that's what it meant when McCoy scored, and the atmosphere changed. Every time Graham Roberts caught the ball, the fans celebrated, as if to say, you haven't scored another goal. Like, football fans will cling on to any victory. And then it's true. When Roberts gets that ball, as you say, but to do that kick out, which eventually leads to the goal, he sort of jumps up and catches it. And the Rangers fans, as if they're a goal ahead, Celtic are chasing, and they've just thwarted another attack. And then they go and equalise, and it's pandemonium in the home end. I mean, it's such a bizarre kind of chain of events from the emotions of those Rangers fans, who presumably thought, well, we're not going to get a point, so we might as well try and celebrate whatever we can. And yet there they go up the other end, and Richard Gough, who had a knack of scoring against Celtic in some of the bigger games, certainly at Ibrox, stabs home the equaliser.
Yeah.
And that's not even the end of it.
If only it was.
Well, as well, I wonder, though, whether the fans, exactly what they were celebrating, because I sort of think there was a 2 or 3 stage thing going on where they were just lost in the moment. It was just the context of an Old Firm game. Well, firstly, it's a last-minute equaliser. You celebrate those with anyone.
Of course.
Then it's against Celtic. Then you've got, you know, you're playing a man down and you've got Coco and goal. It's, you know, and then you're still in the title race. That it was looking, as if they'd stumbled behind, because Hearts were going well that season as well, weren't they? So, I mean, it didn't feel as though it was just going to be a two-horse race. So there was a lot of celebration going on, and then...
too much celebration.
Yeah.
So it starts off with a fairly aimless ball over the top towards Owen Archdeacon.
Mm-hmm.
Roberts gathers cleanly and then decides that he will initiate contact with Archdeacon so he can throw himself to the ground, presumably with half a thought of getting Archdeacon sent off, but mainly just to waste time.
It was a really poor dive as well.
Yeah.
There was a good couple of seconds between.
Yeah, there was never a second's thought that Archdeacon might be in trouble for that.
No.
It was teetering on Rivaldo-esque, it was.
And also, like, Archdeacon was there, you know, looking like a saint going, well, I honestly didn't, you know, again, amongst all this nonsense, I didn't do anything. And you feel, he just, for a minute, looked like such a young... like a little boy.
Yeah.
So there's another delay. Roberts gets to his feet. The Rangers fans are still going mad. And he starts conducting them, singing the sash.
Oh, dear.
Marvellous.
Oh, dear, Roberts. Well, yeah. And so that obviously goes on. The Rangers fans are singing that song. And as you say, Roberts conducts it. The game eventually finishes. But, of course, the ramifications of this game is that four of them end up in the courtroom because of this. Because they are... accused of breaching the peace. So you've got Butcher, Roberts, of course, for his part on it, McAvenny, and Chris Woods. Now, if I'm right in saying, Woods and McAvenny are proved not guilty.
No. Woods and Butcher are both convicted and fined. I think Butcher got £500 fine and Woods £250. Roberts is found not proven.
Yeah.
Which is genuinely extraordinary.
Sorry, yeah, even having just read that before we came into the studio, I'm thinking to myself, "No, I must have read that wrong. Surely Roberts, but he did.
I mean,
so he wasn't proved innocent. It was just not proven.
Yeah, all we can say legally is he was waving his hands in a way that very unfortunately happened to coincide to the rhythm
with a lusty rendition of the sash my father wore. I mean, I wonder, there was that incident maybe about a decade later when Gazza was there.
Yes.
And McCoist had said, or McGazza had just turned up at Ibrox, and McCoist said to him, "Hey, I'll tell you what will get you in. When you first score a goal, go and pretend to play the flute in front of the fans." And he did it. And obviously, Gazza didn't know, and McCoist later said that he knew Gazza didn't know, which is why he just wanted to get him into trouble. Roberts was, you know, more likely to have had a rough idea who was being sung there, I think.
And McAvenny was found not guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Celtic went on to win.
What do you think that tells you about Masonic influence over the Scottish court?
Well, I'd like to distance myself from any kind of chat around there. But... so the game finished 2-2. Rangers amazingly got a point. But incredibly enough, Celtic went on to win the league. Rangers finished third. Hearts finished second.
Yeah, Celtic won the league by 12 points. Yeah. So 12 points ahead of Rangers.
So it's interesting because probably they had so many players suspended and all the rest of it. So oddly, despite that rousing comeback, and it would have been treated as a great victory, really, in the context of it, they actually sort of finished the season on a bit of a whimper, finishing third.
Yeah, it was. Ultimately, it was all for nothing. But
then the following season is the beginning of a 9-in-a-row, and
yeah, and also, I mean, memorable football matches are not necessarily about the winners, the prizes. I mean, I have this sort of theory. Well, it's not much of a theory. It's just an opinion that this match, although it's an Old Firm game and it means so much to both sets, that it really was just about Rangers. It was just about their sort of this psychodrama of the Souness era. Celtic were almost like bystanders. They were almost dragged into this rather than, you know, just the usual Old Firm back and forth. And Rangers are... specifically the Souness Rangers until he left for, you know, left for Liverpool. So what, 85 to 91 or 92. It's that period that people remember, I think, as being this sort of great, not necessarily a great team because they clearly weren't, you know,
a great side,
but such a great story.
Mm.
But you know, Celtic still won a couple of leagues in the middle of it all.
Mm-hmm. But it was never a dull moment, though, was it? As it seldom is when the Old Firm are
exactly. I mean,
involved.
If you were in that stand at the Broomloan stand,
yeah.
where just basically everything happened apart from the conducting. You know, you got your value for money.
Yeah.
You've been like about £4 or something as well.
Blimey. Scott, it's been a pleasure talking to you about that Old Firm game. Thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Jonathan, a pleasure as always. Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Greatest Games on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. The latest issue of The Blizzard, issue 34, is now available, so do go to theblizzard.co.uk. And we shall see you next time.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.